So here is Dr. Lindell, and if she decides to tell you a little more about her, feel free to do so.
Thank you for coming. So I'm talking about a big project. I'm just going to give you a few glimpses of the kinds of things we're doing. This is a specialty crop research initiative funded project, bird management and fruit crops, economic, consumer, and biological perspectives. So yes, there's a lot of authors, there's a lot of co-PIs, and we also have a number of graduate students working on the project. Also a number of institutions. So you can see in the Pacific Northwest, we've got Trinity Western in Canada, Oregon State, and Washington State. We have colleagues at Colorado at the USDA National Wildlife Research Center. We're the lead institution in Michigan State, and then we're also working with colleagues at Cornell. So we're taking a systems approach to this problem, which means that we're looking at it from various perspectives. So the production system, the processing system, the consumer and market system. So the idea is when you take a systems approach that you're more likely to see the interactions, how these different components of the system can interact, and that may have implications for how you manage a problem, how you deal with a problem, and we're looking at bird management. Quick outline of the talk. I'm first going to be talking about a bit of the economic work we're doing, some of the consumer research considerations, some of the large-scale temporal and spatial patterns we're seeing from the ecological perspective, a couple of the mitigation strategies we're testing, and then looking ahead. Again, this is a brief view of a very large project. So even many, many years ago, Audubon noticed that many species of birds eat a lot of cultivated fruit. So the first thing we wanted to do, the information on the economic costs of bird damage were quite dated. So the economics team on our project, led by Dr. Stephanie Schwiff at USDA, looked at the costs of bird damage. And so what we did to address this was we developed a survey that we sent out to growers in five states in 2012. We asked them to evaluate or estimate from 2011 what the bird damage was in various crops that they had. So we focused on five crops in five states. I've only got three of the crops here, three of the crops. And so you can see that there's quite a range of damage. Wine grapes in California, growers only estimated 2.9%, whereas here, sweet cherries in New York, the growers are estimating 31.4%. I should say also there were about 1,500 respondents to the survey. And I'm not going to get into the reasons for the differences here. But we use these estimates then with production and price data, regional price data, to look at what are the costs of bird damage then per hectare. And so you can see, again, they're quite variable. Here we've got wine grapes, $247 per hectare. And then you've got, you know, Oregon, high value, a lot of high value blueberries there, $4,500 per hectare. So then we use these per hectare amounts. And though there are some problems with large-scale extrapolations, we looked at the number of hectares in each region to scale up and see what are the costs per region for bird damage, in particular crops. And so here you can see the bird damage per hectare is not much in wine grapes in California because there is so much acreage in wine grapes. It costs the state $49 million. We're a big blueberry-growing state in Michigan, $14 million. You know, $31 million of bird damage in Washington sweet cherry. So this is a significant problem. We also asked growers in this survey to estimate or to say what they thought about the various bird management techniques that are out there. So the blue and red ones are very or moderately effective, and then the green and purple are slightly and not at all effective. And we have a bunch of different techniques here. On the bottom, only two of the techniques actually got over 50% of the growers to say they were very or moderately effective. Those are netting and lethal shooting. Now, netting is, of course, quite labor-intensive, and it has a set of problems associated with it. The lethal shooting, I'll just use as a segue into the next section. You know, unlike no one generally has a picture of a spotted winged Drosophila on their living room wall, but people do have pictures of birds on their walls and calendars and shower curtains and all kinds of things. So people tend to like birds. And so anything we can do to manage birds in a sustainable manner would be valuable. Okay. So then our food system sociologists in this project, Dr. Phil Howard and Dr. Chiak Oh, they were looking at whether consumers prefer some bird management techniques over others. For the potential marketing and grower advantages this could offer, this type of information. So they started out working with focus groups of fruit consumers, and this was to get a qualitative sense of what people were thinking about different management techniques, and it also helped them develop a survey, which was sent out to 1,000 people. There were 1,000 respondents, and the respondents were matched through a firm that we used to match the percentages of people in different age categories, ethnicities, et cetera, essentially the same as the U.S. national population. And so what I'm going to show in this slide right here, this is just a summary of part of what they did. You can see the dark bars are for apples and the light bars are for grapes. And on the bottom here, you have price from negative to positive. Essentially, they did some choice tests on the survey, and these are willingness to pay measures based in comparison to a reference fruit. And this reference fruit is of non-local origin, and it would be a fruit that they were using lethal ammunition or ammunition to as a bird management strategy. So it's a comparison. And what you can see is that these two bird management techniques, falconry and nest boxes for predators, compared to that reference fruit with those characteristics, consumers were willing to pay more for apples and grapes for fruits produced with these bird management techniques. So falconry is when a falconer comes in, typically they're hired, they come in with a falcon to scare birds away. The nest boxes I'll talk about later in the program, but they're essentially attracting predatory birds to orchards to then scare and potentially kill a few birds. Now this is a technique, artificial grape flavoring. Some of you may know it as methylanthranolate. It's the active ingredient in a number of formulations which are used in some bird repellent chemicals that can be sprayed on crops. They are marketed under a number of different names across the country. And you can see for this, consumers were willing to pay less than that reference fruit there. So based on conversations with the focus groups, our sociologists concluded that, you know, part of the attraction of these things is that they're considered or perceived as more natural by consumers, where the methylanthranolate is considered less natural. Okay, moving into some of the ecology. We've come across some large-scale temporal patterns of bird damage I'll briefly mention. So, you know, this was the first year of our project, and we were, you know, we thought this was disastrous. But in 2012, you can see that Michigan observed maximum temperatures for March were off the chart there. This is our normal average here, this dark line. So really high, both max and minimum temperatures here. I was up at the end of March in northern Michigan. It was 80 degrees. Something was wrong. But what it meant was that our apples and cherries flowered really quickly early in the season. Then there were freezes, so the losses were tremendous in both New York and Michigan that year. Over 90% of the tart cherry crop was lost, sweet cherries, apples. So this was a big blow, we thought, but it turns out we found some interesting things. So when we go out and try to assess, measure the bird damage in a block, what we do is divide it into five strata, as you can see here, edges versus interior. We randomly select plants and then branches on those plants and assess the number of fruits that are intact or missing or damaged. If something looks like it's associated with mammal damage, we don't count that. But so this is what we do to assess damage in different blocks. Cherries, for example, you've got intact, missing, and damage there. And blueberries, we actually do it slightly differently. We have to go in twice. We mark branches, count the berries, and then go back a second time to count the berries. Then we do a weighting procedure. We weight the estimates for each strata by the area that that strata covers in the block to get an overall weighted average damage level for that block. Okay, so this is what we found. I'm going to show you a few graphs like this. Here's percent loss on this axis, number of fruit sampled. The big take-home message here is that these blue boxes are from 2012 and these red circles are from 2013. So for sweet cherries in Michigan, much more variable in damage levels and typically much higher in 2012 compared to 2013, where we sampled a lot of those same blocks. This number of fruit sampled, you could think of it as an index for the fruit abundance in the atmosphere. So as that increased, we got much lower damage levels, or it looks that way. We saw a similar pattern, though not quite as striking, for Honeycrisp apples, more variable and typically higher damage for the 2012 blocks, and then we've got lower damage for the 2013 blocks, when both cultivated and natural fruit were more available in the environment. And then we also have the Michigan tart cherries showing a similar pattern. So what it looks like is that, you know, bird damage is going to be much more of a priority in low-yield years because there's less fruit in the environment. What is existing there is very susceptible to bird damage. Then if we overlay some landscape pattern on the temporal pattern, we can see some interesting things here as well. So you remember that data collection protocol dividing the blocks into strata? That allowed us to look at the damage levels on the edges and interiors of blocks. And also we could look at the influence of different land cover types on the edges, on damage. So for example, we have some edges that are near deciduous forest and some that are near other blueberries. Okay, so we can look at those differences and how they affect damage. All right, we're still waiting for 2014 data here, and these are really preliminary results. But I just want you to know, this is blueberries, blue crop blueberries in Michigan, 2012, 2013, again, percent loss here. And I've got three edge types. We have three strata. Interiors are the open ones. Then we've got edges that are not near forest, and then we have edges near forest. So two things to take away from this graph. One is that, like the other fruits, we had higher damage levels in 2012 compared to 2013. Not as pronounced as for cherries and apples, but obvious there. And then also you can see that in both years, the edges near forest were the most susceptible to bird damage, twice as high in the nearly in the 2012 year there. Okay, so these preliminary findings suggest edges near tall deciduous woods show twice the bird damage of field interiors, and that during these low fruit abundance years, edge management may be particularly important. These landscape influences may play more of a role. Okay, let's look at some of the techniques we're looking at to mitigate bird damage. Again, we're looking at a number of different things, but this is one that has captured the attention of people. These are inflatables, air dancers, or air rangers. They are called, yes, I know, they, you know, used car lot is what you think of. But we are setting them up. We're looking at them. We set them up 2 weeks before harvest. And then we have paired fields in cherries and blueberries. We're also going to look at grapes. And we have the paired sites have a control and a treatment. We're really also interested in looking at the area over which they work, the distance effect of these dancers. And in grapes this year, we'll be looking at multiple dancers versus single dancers in particular blocks. Issues with the inflatables or dancers are, one, we haven't been able to get them working on solar panels yet, so they do need a power source. You can't run them in heavy rain. And also some dogs are very averse to them. I mean, it's really variable by dog. I know it sounds funny, but we had to take one down at one farm because of the dogs. And anyway, stay tuned for the results on this. Another thing I wanted to mention, because this came up in the consumer portion of the work, is these predator nest boxes. So this is an American kestrel. It uses nest boxes. They've been used quite heavily in the Pacific Northwest for bird management and in other parts of the country in fruits for rodent management. But there hasn't been a lot of systematically collected data on exactly what proportions of their diet are made up of these different prey types. So we've set up a bunch of nest boxes in orchards in northern Michigan. I have a great grad student, Megan Shave, working on this. She's very hardworking, and she's developed a lot of nice low-cost techniques to do this. So here she's got a pool skimmer. She's checking the box. She's looking at the different proportions of different prey types in their diet using video recordings of the kestrel boxes and the collection of their pellets that they produce in prey remains. As I mentioned, low-cost systems she's got, but they seem to be working very well to get that data from the cameras. Let me see if this is going to work now. So this is the kind of thing she gets. Okay, so that was a female kestrel delivering a vole, which are problematic in orchards. So she's got hours and hours of tapes like that she has to go through. Okay, so lots of insect parts, lots of bird parts, lots of mammal parts. Just briefly, if you looked at the average from 2013, one pair of kestrels, when they're feeding their young for 30 days, are going to take about 1,800 insects out of the environment, 71 mammals, and 48 birds. If you scale that up to the 16 kestrel boxes we now have in Michigan that were active this year in fruit orchards, you've got nearly 30,000 insects being removed, 1,000 mammals, and 700 birds. So they're really providing some ecosystem services, we might say. Looking ahead, we're going to be analyzing data from our 2014 trials, considering these results in the context of our consumer and economic data, and continuing extension material production. Thanks to a lot of different parties, and look at our website.
Thank you, Maureen.
Okay.